Good afternoon. This is Alfred Wallace reading the Decatur Herald and Review for the 23rd of October 2015. We will begin today with some local news. Ameren upgrading to meet modern electricity needs. Mwikwa. The future of power distribution in central Illinois is taking shape on the edge of a cornfield outside Moayaqua. Drivers zipping up and down US 51 have seen work crews laboring late into the night to create concrete bases the size of small circular dining tables, dotted with a ring of upright bolts like birthday candles. These are waiting to receive the metal power poles, stretching from 80 feet in height up to 120 feet, depending on how much strain they have to cope with, that are destined to carry the high voltage lines of the Illinois River's transmission project. The northward march up the side of US 51 from a Panna substation toward Decatur is just one small section of the 1.4 billion 345,000 kilovolt line. It stretches 400 miles from Palmyra, Missouri to the Indiana border. The bulk of the work is being carried out by Ameren Corporation subsidiary Ameren Transmission Company of Illinois, ATXI, with some help from the Ameren Illinois utility. Recently, there has been a flurry of power line-related activity in the Decatur-Mount Zion area, some of it connected to a new substation that is part of the Illinois River's project. Other work in the Decatur-Mount Zion corridor has included replacing poles and stringing new, higher-capacity lines to beef up the strength and capability of the local power grid. With a larger classification of wires being put in, it's like going from a two-lane highway to a four-lane highway, Ameren Corporation spokesman Brian Bretsch said. It's all part of a major push, in projects big and small, to improve and enhance the power grid. Illinois Rivers is just one of the several major new transmission line initiatives, for example, that also include the Spoon River Transmission Project, which will cost $150 million, and runs 46 miles between Galesburg and Peoria, and is due to be in service by 2018. Ameren Corporation's total spending on electricity and natural gas infrastructure projects in Illinois over the next 4 years alone is due to hit $7.5 billion. The last great surge in transmission line spending and upgrades was back in the 1960s and 1970s to cope with demand issues, such as the increased use of air conditioners. Now, Ameren has said more power line capacity is needed to help a power system undergoing significant change. We need to be flexible enough to deal with things like coal plants, power stations, going down and renewable energy sources, like wind and solar, coming up, said Peggy Ladd, Director of Transmission Stakeholder Relations for Ameren. Ladd said new lines are needed in new places to tap into the new sources of power and move the volts to where the customers live. Ladd said there is a feeling of some urgency to get this done, and this is why federal regulators who oversee big regional transmission line projects have approved more than a dozen of them since 2011. Most of them with very short dates to be in service, added Ladd. So that requires us hoofing it, as I call it. Consumers wind up footing the bill for all this, of course, and Ameren Corporation particularly likes big, federally regulated transmission projects because they offer guaranteed double-digit returns on its investment. But the company argues it's in lightened self-interest, because consumers are delivered a more flexible and robust power grid with access to new power sources that can actually save them money. Ladd said transmission project numbers were crunched by the Mid-Continent Independent System Operator, which oversees the regional power transmission system, and it concluded families and businesses saved big. For every $1.80 we spend on transmission, customers are going to see about $2.50 to $3.50 in savings in other areas of their bill, said Ladd, noting that new lines offered greater access to cheaper power. So consumers actually see more benefits than they do costs. The Citizens Utility Board, a utility watchdog group, agrees that an enhanced power grid is an important part of Illinois' electricity future. But CUB said a careful eye must be kept on costs to make sure they are fairly distributed, so the consumers who benefit the most bear most of the expense. Cost allocation is a very important piece of the puzzle, said David Collada, CUB's executive director. And it can get complicated. Collada also warns against seeing transmission line investment as the single best answer to giving families and businesses a better and cheaper power delivery system. He said CUB is becoming convinced the ultimate answer may lie in consumers shortening the power delivery route dramatically by generating their own electricity. Collada points to the plunging costs of equipment and battery technology associated with home solar power generation, and said we're on track for that to be the cheapest alternative power supply for most people within 5 to 10 years. The power grid is going to look a lot different than it does now, he added, and I think that's very encouraging. In education news, Children's Museum joins reading world record effort. Decatur. A field trip to the Children's Museum of Illinois turned into a chance Thursday for a group of students from ABC Preschool in Decatur to join in an effort to set a world record. The museum organized a Read for the Record event as a way to promote literacy, said Jen McMillan, its director of marketing and development. The goal is to see how many people can read the same book on the same day through the Jumpstart program. It's important at their age to be reading at grade level, McMillan said. We focus on promoting the arts and science. It all factors in together. Linda Morrell read Not Norman, a Goldfish Story, to the group of 3 and 4-year-olds. The story is about a child who finds a new friend in an unexpected place, after not at first wanting to have a goldfish. Norman turned out to be a pretty good pet, said Morrell, the museum's special events and projects coordinator and gift shop manager, as she discussed the book with the children. Reading is emphasized in lessons for the students, said Liz Halkdis, the school's director. So, she said, the field trip fit in perfectly with what they normally work on. It's why we're always going to places like the library, Halkdis said. They work on it daily with their teachers. The children had the opportunity after the story to get their hands messy for an art project with orange paint, but they took turns lining up to wash their hands without making a bigger mess. The art project included a handprint to be used inside a goldfish bowl on a piece of paper. It's a good craft for their age group, McMillan said. The Education Coalition of Macon County co-sponsored the event by donating books for the children to take home. Hopefully they've got a library started at home they can add it all to, McMillan said. She hopes Jumpstart will have the final numbers available within the next few days. The museum made its contribution by being able to add more than 25 participants to the tally. The record is more than 2.4 million people set in 2013. More than 14.5 million children and adults have participated in the program over its 10 years. Also in education news, Richland President Saunders to retire in the spring. Decatur. Gail Saunders is hoping to leave Richland Community College in a place where it can be successful, even after she moves on from her position in the spring. Saunders announced Wednesday plans to retire after 15 years as Richland's president. She started the job as the college's sixth president in August 2001 and has worked 40 years as an administrator in higher education, including 33 years in Illinois Community College Administration. I'm confident and hopeful the college is the best it's ever been, said Saunders, who is a native of Harvard, Illinois. I determined it is a good time to step away. We've had an electrifying way this semester has started, and the college is going to be good heading into the future. The decision is one Saunders and her husband, Rich, have been contemplating, and one they feel is best to allow them to spend more time with family. Saunders is looking forward to welcoming 3 new grandchildren within the next year, in addition to the 2 grandchildren they already have. Saunders plans to spend more time in Florida, but she will remain tied in into what is happening in Decatur. It has been a community that Saunders has grown to care deeply for, as it has shown its perseverance during her time as Richland's president. This community will always bounce back, Saunders said. It thrives in spite of itself. It's an amazing, resilient community. Richland has helped by responding to the needs of businesses within the community under Saunders' leadership, Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said. It is well positioned to respond in any way needed and move the community forward, Moore Wolf said. Richland has had an explosion of growth. She has set the bar high. Moore Wolf is grateful Saunders never decided to take another job over the past 15 years. Saunders said the support of the community and College Board of Trustees has helped her decide to stay when she considered other possibilities. The board appreciates what Saunders has done for the college, Chairman Bruce Campbell said. She has been a dynamic individual within the community, Campbell said. The entire board has been extremely supportive of her efforts. In many ways, it will be a loss to the community as a whole. Saunders' leadership has put the college in a position to succeed, Campbell said. Numerous building projects have been completed during her tenure, including the addition of a culinary arts institute with restaurant, workforce development institute, and National Sequestration Education Center. Other additions include the Scherer Industrial Technology Center, Schrott Health Education Center, Duane O. Andreas Agribusiness Education Center, Adele P. Glenn Early Childhood Education Center, Center for Sustainability and Innovation and Mathematics Enrichment Center. Additionally, Heartland Technical Academy relocated to the Richmond campus in 2014. Richland became one of the permanent hosts for the Farm Progress Show in 2005. The show continues to grow after being in Decatur six times, with a $1 million expansion of Progress City, USA already completed, Saunders said. It has exceeded expectations. It is everything we dreamed it would become as a recognition for Decatur to solidify its place as the global agribusiness capital. Farm Progress Show manager Matt Youngman has seen incredible growth at Richland while he's been involved with the Decatur community. It's not just the Farm Progress Show, Youngman said. It's all the other initiatives. None of these things happen without tremendous leadership in setting the tone for growth. Youngman notices changes coming back to Richland every other year. I've got to be reintroduced to campus, Youngman said. The one regret Saunders has is it now appears likely she won't be around for the opening of the Student Success Center, which is intended to bring a variety of student services under one roof. Completion of the project is dependent on funding from the state, Saunders said. It will be there, Saunders said. It's a matter of when the budget gets passed and when the funding will be released. Work on the Student Success Center was originally scheduled to be completed in the spring, but further construction is now on hold. If the project appeared closer to completion, Saunders said it could have influenced the timing of when she steps away, but it's too uncertain for her to continue waiting any longer. The project will allow the next president to have a new office, she said. Campbell said the board plans to meet Monday to discuss the search process. He said Saunders is working with them to allow time for the process to at least get started before she leaves. Saunders has set a strong foundation for the next president, despite uncertainty from the state budget situation, Campbell said. He said choosing a president is one of the most important decisions a community college board can make. Richland will be an attractive option for anyone seeking the position, Campbell said. We will figure out a way to weather the storm. Campbell planned to begin the first steps in the search process Wednesday by contacting possible consultants who could help. Saunders wants to be involved in the transition to the next president, but not so much that it would impede on their ability to make their own footprint. Student trustee Donnie Lewis said Saunders put her heart and soul into Richland with the students in mind. I don't think she can ever really be replaced, Lewis said. She has had such a vision like no one else I've ever met in my life. She has always had time for everybody. Lewis wants the next president to be able to keep Richland on the course it's on and be mindful of students' concerns. The partnerships Saunders has helped develop throughout the college have allowed students of all ages to benefit, said Renee Stivers, Partners in Education Director. The program reaches students at the K-12 level and introduces them to career possibilities and what training is needed to start those careers, Stivers said. We can stay current because of the relationship, said Stivers. We can touch the lives of students at a younger age. She has set a vision for us. Richland wouldn't be what it is without what Saunders has done, said Moore Wolf. She has made the college an integral part of the community by responding to the needs of businesses, Moore Wolf said. The campus has evolved, and Richland has become a school of choice for an affordable education. She has made the image desirable. Saunders has also been active in the Decatur community, serving in a number of capacities during the past 15 years. Saunders and other Richland staff members have served on the Workforce Investment Solutions Board as the two entities partner on job training programs, said Robin McCoy, Workforce Investment Solutions Executive Director. That's not always the case across the state, McCoy said. I attribute that to her leadership. Working together is what it's all about. She will be missed, but I'm excited for her. Most recently, Richland has been a part of recruiting Convey Health Solutions to Decatur, as it opens a new office and hires more than 300 employees locally, McCoy said. The college is in the middle of a capital campaign to raise funding for its business school, said Saunders. She said it's reached about 60% of its goal. The addition from a successful capital campaign is one of the reasons Saunders feels confident that the college will continue to succeed after she retires. Everything is in place, Saunders said. The board has done a wonderful job leading us as we try to be a part of leading the community in a strong, positive direction. In local news, library drafts response to mayor. Decatur. The Decatur Public Library Board voted unanimously Thursday to answer Mayor Julie Moore Wolf's request that the city acquire title to the library building at 130 North Franklin Street. The nature of the response will remain secret until today, as board members refused to release the contents of the document until Board President John Phillips personally delivers it to Moore Wolf at 3 p.m. Phillips declined to summarize the letter, only saying that it contained, quote, nothing negative. We're not out saying we don't want to do this or anything negative, he said. We're saying, hey, okay, here's a response to what you asked us to do. Before voting to adopt and send the response, the board discussed it in closed session for more than half an hour. Moore Wolf's initial letter was read aloud to the board by Assistant City Manager Jerry Bauer at its regular meeting last week. In it, she said Decatur residents paid for the building already through taxes and fundraising contributions, and stressed the city's commitment to preserving the library. The letters are the latest development in months of uncertainty about the library's future. Officials from the library, Macon County, and Decatur Public Building Commission announced a plan in November that aimed to address the library's maintenance needs and maximize government efficiency. Under the plan, the library board would sell its building to the building commission. Macon County government offices would move into unused space on the library's second floor and in its annex building. A private developer planned to turn the county's office building at 141 South Main Street into residential space. But Decatur City Council members expressed concerns about the deal, citing $735,000 in outstanding debt from bonds issued in 1998 to pay for library renovations. The library is also valued as a $4.1 million asset on city financial statements, even though the library board holds the deed. The council in August directed city manager Tim Gleason to look into alternatives. It remains unclear what the city, as a potential owner, would do to address the library's capital needs, or what type of tenant would be secured for the building's unused space in that scenario. Asked what comes next in the process, Phillips said, "The world will have whatever this letter is tomorrow at 3 o'clock. It will lead to further discussions to try to figure out where we are and where we're going." He said the library board would like to see the matter resolved as quickly as possible. The facility's maintenance needs must be addressed, and its remaining maintenance employees are working under an uncertain future, as their positions would have been eliminated if the building commission purchased the building. "There are several reasons to move as fast as possible, but we aren't dictating that," he said. "We're just saying, let's move as quickly as we can." Also in local news, the Park District contemplates tax increase and golf future. Decatur. As the Decatur Park District muddled through 5 years of declining property values, it put off major capital needs. "Those costs have caught up to the district," Chief Financial Officer Rodney Buehr said the Park Board Wednesday. While there is good news in the form of an expected 1.4% property value increase, the capital needs could push commissioners to consider an increase in property tax rates. "Everything's getting older, and we keep pushing things back," Buehr said. And the delays add up. Most notably, the roof of the Fairview Park Pavilion No. 1 is in desperate need of repair, at an estimated cost of $330,000. A few years ago, the cost was estimated at $200,000, but the district delayed work, and the damage became greater and more expensive. There are also roughly $2 million in paving costs that need to be addressed in the next 3 years. The district's current property tax rate is $1.12 per $100 of equalized assessed value, which could bring in about $9.2 million in revenue next year. Buehr presented options to keep the rate the same or to increase it by up to 3 cents. Each cent would bring in about $82,000 more for the district. Upon being asked for a recommendation by Commissioner Bob Brilley II, Buehr said he would like to see the 3 cent increase. The district faces more fiscal uncertainty than ever, with the state-level discussion of a minimum wage increase and property tax freeze, and health care costs continuing to pose some unknowns. For the owner of a $100,000 home, a 1 cent increase in the district's property tax rate would cost an additional $2.73 per year. A 3 cent increase would cost the same homeowner $8.19 extra per year. Commissioners did not come to a consensus, but are expected to discuss the matter further at their next meeting. In other business, the board approved new facility fee amounts for 2016, with most areas seeing an increase of 2% to 3%. Admission fees at Scoville Zoo and Overlook Adventure Miniature Golf went up 25 cents. "Largely, what we have here is just increases to the cost of doing things," Buehr said. "It keeps going up." Golf fees were not part of that discussion. Buehr said the district was continuing to gather data and will hold a focus group meeting for golfers before setting golf fees later this year. Summer participation numbers for the district's three courses told a grim story. The Park District last year attempted to draw in new golfers by decreasing fees at Scoville Golf Course to $29 for 18 holes with a cart. At the time, officials said the move would not work if golfers shifted from the Hickory Point and Red Tail Run courses to the cheaper rounds at Scoville. But that's exactly what happened this year, Buehr said. Rounds at Scoville were up over the previous year by 2,578, but they decreased by 2,929 at Hickory Point and 656 at Red Tail Run. Estimates have the total number of golf rounds for this fiscal year at 65,766, down from last year's 67,655. 10 years ago, the district logged 97,570 rounds. In 1990, about 190,000 rounds of golf were played on Decatur's public courses. "We're playing 35% of the rounds we were playing in 1990, Buer said. Surveying the numbers, Burley said the district cannot continue to lose money on golf. He cited national statistics that golfers make up 7 to 8% of the population, a percentage that Park District Executive Bill Clevenger said is lower in Decatur. "So that leaves the other 95% of the taxpayers paying for a loss in golf," Burley said. "We did everything we could at Scoville, but we still lost money. I think we need to discuss it and do something pretty drastic, in my opinion." Speaking after the meeting, Board President Jack Kenney said he didn't know what action the board might take. "I don't think we can continue with what we did this year," he said. "We proved to ourselves that lowering the cost didn't increase the rounds." Later in the meeting, the board voted to recommend a 2-year contract for Air Choice One to continue to serve as the Decatur Airport's commercial air carrier. The Federal Department of Transportation will make the final decision, but it takes the Park District's opinion into account, said Airport Director Tim Wright. Commissioners also recommended that the airline offer 24 flights to Chicago per week and 12 to St. Louis, rather than the current split of 18 weekly flights to each city. In business news, IHOP and Farmers Insurance. Changes are being made to the IHOP restaurant in Decatur after coming under new management in August. The IHOP at 1280 East Pershing Road is now being run by Brittany McCorp, which is owned by Larry McDonald of Springfield. McDonald operates 5 IHOP franchises in the Midwest, along with another one being built in Champaign. "We have made great improvements in a short time," spokeswoman Jennifer Williams said. Brittany McCorp has a great track record of taking struggling IHOP restaurants and improving all aspects of operations. The new owner plans to update landscaping to improve curb appeal, along with focusing on providing better service, quality food, and a clean environment to promote a friendly family dining experience, Williams said. IHOP's menu includes 65 different breakfast items, including pancakes and omelets, in addition to lunch, dinner, and dessert options. Williams said they're hoping Decatur residents will revisit the IHOP starting with a grand reopening ribbon-cutting ceremony at 11:30 a.m. today, along with discounts being offered today and Saturday. "Prices have been lowered on select menu items," Williams said. The Decatur location is now open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, including all holidays. Also, Tara Ostlund is open for business as a farmer's insurance agent at 100 East Washington Street, Suite 100 in Decatur, having taken on the clients of Richard McDonald, who retired earlier this year. His office was in the 100 block of North Main Street. A native of Assumption, Austin holds an associate's degree from Lincoln Land Community College in Springfield, and until 5 years ago, worked as a respiratory therapist at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Her office hours are 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., Monday through Friday, and evenings and weekends by appointment. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review right after this. Please stay tuned.